not an annual bond interest. It's a 360-day.
Yeah, it's 3360
interest. And then I'm start looking at 1% yields, and the only figure way you came out with that is if you're paying 12% for a 2 or 3 year bond. That doesn't look right at all. And I think that's one of the issues that we need to look at. And then we had another problem is that we have a big gap in our payment schedule. And we put off cabs for 5 years. And these things are just compounding, and they're extraordinarily expensive. By having that hole in our payment schedule, our tax rate goes from 43 to 7 or 8 for 5 years. And these big expensive bonds were allowed to compound over those years. And if we had paid them off immediately with just a slight restructuring and maybe a dollar or two tax rate increase, we'd have saved something like $80, $90 million.
Well, that's, I think that may be a very simplistic analysis. What I'd offer, when this whole thing about cabs came up, I actually did some research and I put some thoughts together and I actually found a very good analytical piece on cabs. It was an analysis and they really looked at Poway. And the reason I thought it was good, and I sent this, and you'll see my email. Thank you. The reason I distributed this to the school board is because I thought it was very neutral. It was what appeared to me a pretty unbiased analysis of cabs. Because it's a tool, it's a financing tool. It can be abused, but it can also provide some benefits if it fits within the overall portfolio management of the debt for the district. Cabs have some benefits, right? It generates a premium up front that you wouldn't otherwise get. So it's cabs are a little complicated.
One short.
So we need to be careful
okay.
about
okay.
making some.
Thank you.
Right, but isn't that one of our functions is to inform citizens of this sort of issues
exactly.
and to make sure that our program is efficient?
Exactly. You're right. It is. And to me, that means that we take a look at all of the available information. And unfortunately, because cabs are so complex, there's been a lot of misinformation about cabs.
Yeah.
And like you're discovering, it's not so easy to figure out, is this particular use of cabs egregious? Like Poway probably was. But again, I don't know what their whole portfolio looked like. But when you're talking about putting a series of cabs in an overall issuance, it may not be such a bad thing because it helped you get the money you needed to accomplish the capital improvements
right.
that you wanted. If it's done in the context of the debt capacity of the community and your assumptions about
yes.
the intergenerational transfer of that debt obligation, right? All of that needs to be considered.
Right. And I'd like to start it with getting the actual results, seeing what our tranche-by-tranche performance is, and then see if the overall makes sense.
I would suggest going the other way. You look at the overall portfolio of our debt. In fact, now, Monday is the school board is having a meeting that we've been invited to,
mm-hmm.
and I think they're going to be talking about perhaps starting the conversation about the next issuance of Prop K.
If the board asked for a informational meeting to discuss what could be done with the remainder of the bond authorization. We have up to just slightly less than $80 million left if we sold all $287 million. So they've asked the financial advisor to say, okay, how much is there? What could you do? How much would it cost? Give us various scenarios. Give us the law. They're slightly changing the law that will take place in January. They haven't passed it yet, but as a result of some of the issues that have come out on the nationwide cab issue and so forth, they've tweaked it a bit. So they're asking for an update on that and how that'll affect us, but it's strictly informational. Staff did not go to them and say, okay, we would like to sell the next level of bonds. They just wanted to do that, and would it be, now, would we have to wait 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, whatever the case may be. So they just wanted to talk to them and ask, questions for a presentation.
So I think it would be appropriate for us to attend and observe and listen. What I did, I just put together some of my thoughts for staff and for the board and for our committee's consideration in terms of looking at if we are going to do another issuance of bonds out of the Prop K authorization. I think what's the need? What's the remaining need that our schools have that we were looking at using the Prop K funds for? What are the estimated costs for providing those needs? And then when we talk about the financing plan for the subsequent issuance, you know, what's the amount that's being talked about to generate the funds for the improvements? How the issue fits into the overall school district debt portfolio, right? What do we have currently? What's this going to do? How does it fit in with the existing debt that exists? What's the remaining weighted average maturity of the school district debt portfolio before the issuance and after the issuance? What's the remaining weighted average life of the improvements financed with the bonds before and after the improvements to be funded? Again, that goes to the issue of, you know, you want to use long-term bonds to finance capital improvements, not operating or very short-term, non-durable things. If CABs are proposed, what's the structure of the CAB series? You know, how much of it is of the total issue? What's the maturity? What are the criteria? And the impact on the financing plan if no CABs are included. Because if you aren't going to do CABs, it may have an impact on the amount of funds that you're able to generate. You may wind up not being able to do what you want to do. So I think that's important to know. And importantly, what are the assumptions from this point forward regarding the debt capacity of the school district after the issuance? You know, to support debt service for what we already have, plus the debt service for the new bonds, be they a portion of CABs or just serial term bonds or whatever. You know, we have to look at the debt capacity, and can the new issue of bonds on top of what we already have be supported? And then, you know, also the timing. You know, timing is going to be a factor here. Interest rates are at historic lows. They're starting to go up already. We had a big spike just a few weeks ago. They aren't going to be going down. They're going to be going up. The cost of improvements is not going to be going down. It's going to be going up as the economy is turning around. So, you know, there's an impact here in terms of delaying any issuance as well. So these are some of the issues that I think would be important for the financial advisor to address, for staff and for the board to think about as they consider new issuance of bonds. So I just wanted to share that with the committee. And we're all invited to attend the board meeting.
4 o'clock.
4 o'clock.
Yes, sir. So just so I have some idea, Gary, what do you think is an appropriate debt-to-principal ratio, generally speaking?
They're looking at a 4-to-1 at the state level. Ours is combined, it's about 3.5, 3.6, somewhere in there.
No, it's Series B was 6-something.
But if we would have sold it all together, it would have been 3.6. If we wouldn't have had an A and a B, we just had an A. Yeah. Altogether, it would have been about 3.5-something.
That's why it's important, I think, to look at it from a broader perspective, not just a single slice, because we're talking about generating funds that are necessary, you know, the big pile of money that it's necessary to accomplish all the things we want to accomplish. And how do we do that in the most efficient way? And it may be, you know, depending on the market, depending on the structure at the time, that doing a slug of CABs in there is going to be the optimum way. Now, if you just take that slice out and look at it, it looks terrible. It looks terrible. But when you look at it in terms of the whole, it may be exactly the right thing to do because you're going to get a lot better result. You're going to get more cash. It allows you to do what you need to do. The debt service as the portfolio is well supported by the capacity of the community. So that's why I'm concerned about just doing things on a tranche-by-tranche basis, because you do that, and CABs look ugly. They do. But as part of the whole, they may make absolute sense.
Well, if you have bad portions of a CAB, why don't you roll them over into a good one?
Because there are implications of doing that, and that's why I'm saying.
Okay. What are those implications?
Okay, you're not going to get as much money up front to do what you want to do. It may impact your maturity schedules. You know, a CAB may fit right into your overall portfolio schedule where it makes sense to have a long-dated CAB zero coupon. Corporations use zero coupon bonds all the time. Municipalities use zero coupon, they're called zero coupon bonds in the rest of the world. They use them all the time to fit holes.
Yeah, treasury notes.
In their maturity schedules.
We need a cab for $30,000 on a $287 million bond that's costing us 12%?
Because in the larger scheme of things, that may be the most efficient thing to do.
Okay, but what is the justification for paying 12% on a short-term bond?
Because overall, when you consider the premium you're going to get up front and how it fits into the whole portfolio schedule, it's what makes sense. But I can't answer that.
But we need to look at the premiums.
Exactly. Yes, that's what I'm saying. You need
results.
To say, here's if you're proposing cabs, this is what your structure looks like, right? How does it fit into your overall portfolio? And what is the implication to the district if you do a structure without cabs? So you see that comparison.
Well, I'm not talking about cabs or not cabs.
I'm talking about cabs and
how they're structured and taking a look at them. I just do not understand why we pay 12% on a one-year bond.
You aren't paying 12% on a one-year bond.
Why don't we do it?
Before you jump to that, let me do some homework on it.
Okay. But can I get the actual results to start?
I will research it. Like I said, I was gone for 2 weeks and I couldn't get you those things. So let me do some research.
Okay. It was just a little disturbing that I asked for what our actual bond results is and no one seems to be able to give me the answers.
They available online?
These are just estimates.
Gary, may I ask him, when we did the bond issuance, mm-hmm. you went to the board and you provided them the final bond docs. They approved them, didn't they? Wouldn't that have the structure?
No, that they had the prelim estimates in it to get approval to sell the bonds.
All right, so then you went to the market and you sold, and then didn't you bring back...
I'd have to check what documents we brought back. We do a lot of resolutions, and then a lot of the documents come to me this thick,
right.
And I deal with those and sign off on those. But I'd have to look at that. But
I have a book a trail this thick. The
right, there is an advantage in certain instances to sell a high yield bond out there because you will sell it for more cash up front. You'll get a premium for it, but you're still paying the 12% as a taxpayer.
You pay whatever the rate in the market is, right, for that particular structure. 12%, that's the number you have somewhere. But it's something that what the market's going to tell you when you issue the bonds, right?
And the 12% is in our documents.
I don't know what that is.
No, this is a bond disclosure.
But what I can tell you is there's no way the district is paying 12% on a one-year serial bond.
Okay, let's see the actual costs.
Yeah. Now, that sounds like it might be a coupon for the cab, but a cab is not a one-year maturity.
Correct. But if you have something that matures in about a year and it's a cab, or a year and a half, or 2 years...
You wouldn't have a cab with a 1 or 2 year maturity. Cabs have maturities that are out long. You don't get any benefit by doing a 1 or 2 year cab.
But we have 8 of them that are short-term. Cabs.
Let me look at it. Before we spend an hour discussing it,
that gets into the agenda, and I think this is something I'm trying to wrestle with the Taxpayer Association. And if we don't get this settled, it's going to have major impacts on any new bond that we get.
Right. People need to have a clear understanding of how the cab is going to fit in and what the impact of not having a cab in the structure is going to be.
Because the catastrophe is... We got Alvord just up here in Riverside. They're paying $105 in interest for every dollar they raise. And their debt, because of cabs, so collapsed, they're exceeding their 2.5% debt level, and they can't sell any more bonds for schools.
No doubt there have been abuses.
Right.
Absolutely. I encourage you to read that article that I attached. I think it was a pretty fair discussion. It's not from the perspective of a bond issuer. It's written for investors in cabs, or analyzing the risk to investors in cabs. But he does a very good job of explaining the issues with cabs, the benefits of cabs, and the issues with cabs.
But as a Citizens Oversight Committee, we're looking at it from the taxpayer view, not the investor view.
Well, no, I...
I take a much broader perspective. I'm looking at it from the school district's view. That's right. The students, that's the parents, that's the taxpayers. It's not just the taxpayers. You know, I want facilities that are going to be good for our kids to go to school and get a good education.
Right, but I would have to agree that our charter is that we're the bond oversight committee. We're not the policymakers.
That's right.
You know, we don't get a vote on the board or the council. Yeah. You have to run for office for that. But you know, with that in mind, I'm also curious. This has sparked my interest. You know, we've had long discussions about the cabs and the components they had and the overall offering and what the total cost was and the blended cost and the nuances of what happens when you have a plan and you don't necessarily, because life changes, you don't necessarily act on that plan, what that does to your percentages. But whatever you provide, I assume you provide all the board members, so in the future meeting we can have an informed discussion and we all have the same information in front of us. Because if it's 12%, if that's just the number, then I think we should be aware of it. We'd own it. But I suspect it might be something different, but we should all be on the same page with it.
Well, David has a good point. I think any information that you send to any one member, you should be sure it's to all members.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea when you can divide these figures?
I have to look at it. I can't say like 12 o'clock tomorrow. I'm just going to have to.
Early next week would be fine with me.
Yeah, well, you know, another option is you could put it on the next meeting for us. That way it's a
right. That's what the issue is on getting the next meeting date.
Well, the next meeting would be October.
Now, when do you have to go for your next bond issue?
We don't have to go anywhere. It could be years from now.
Well, do you plan on another bond issue?
I'm not planning on one, but if the board, you'll know Monday night. Go Monday and you'll get some inkling on where we might be going. I did not ask the board to say, can we go out for the next level of bonds?
Well, there was two things. One is next level, and the other one is whether or not we have another bond offering.
I mean, in addition to Prop K.
Right.
Oh, I don't see that in my lifetime. But it's not impossible, but I don't know. There'd have to be a pretty big push in the community to do that.
Right. You would see that like a tidal wave coming years in advance, typically. Yeah. These things don't happen organically overnight.
It took
a bond offering.
We started that whole process in about before 2008. Mm-hmm. It's a long process. And
right.
The Taxpayer Association disclosure alone is about 300 or 400 pages.
It was a lot, and I do want to remind you that, and you're probably going to see some figures Monday night. When we took it to the Taxpayers Association community, we estimated that the 287 would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $950 million payback, mm-hmm. Which would include, it included CABS. We presented that to the Taxpayers Association and CIBS. If we only did CIBS and no CABS, I asked the finance guy, how long we'd have to wait. He goes, about 25 years. For that B, that section B, we wouldn't have been able to say we would have had to wait about 25 years to do all CIBS. And just as a reminder, because I forget what I told the previous group and this group, the callable thing, interesting concept, it would have cost us about, I think, 50 basis points, or they estimated $40 million more. It would have cost us more. The only way you can refinance a bond is if the interest rates go lower. And I don't see them going lower. I've done that with this district. We've refinanced some bonds we sold in the 90s, which were probably in the 7% range when they dropped down to about 5.5. So it sounds good to have a refinance of, you know, we call it callable bonds. My colleagues at Oceanside did it, and I actually saw some comparative numbers. And it's hard to compare because if you sell it even 4 months sooner, different interest rates. But it was about 0.5% per year.
But the concept though is you're retaining, you're giving yourself an option.
Yes.
That's worth it because the other side now is losing control. He's giving control to you, so you're going to pay for it.
Yeah.
That's just the way it works.
And all the ones I've seen, it's a minimum 10 years.
Right.
So you have to.
Yeah. It's a 10-year call. 10-year no call.
Yeah. And then on the first year there's a premium, you pay an extra 1% the next year, or 2% then 1 year. But that's one of the reasons. That's one of the reasons we didn't see. You could call it, and we didn't want to spend another 40 million. That's
right. Hindsight's 2020, you know, and that's, I think, the thing, you know, because I remember in the original discussion on our bond offering that there was a cab component, and it was relatively small, but I think what was surprising to me and a bunch of other people was that it wasn't callable, and that's what I think, that's the question that I think some folks forgot to ask is, in this one aspect of your portfolio, what type of risk do you have and what is your mitigating factor? And later, after this sort of blew up with Poway, that's when at least I learned, because I asked the question, because I always assumed, well, you can refinance that. That's part of, you know, because part of your bond offering might be an investment strategy. And you may know that in high periods of inflation with high interest rates that you may plan on refinancing at some point in time. You have historic lows, you have historic highs, too. How it goes. So, but that's the thing that surprised me the most on our cabs, because some cabs are callable. There's a premium you pay for it, right? I mean, it's call it insurance or call it whatever you like. But and the other aspect of this, too, is, and I'm not an expert in the bond market, but the bond market's changed. You used to be able to get insurance and all kinds of cool stuff, other instruments, things like that don't necessarily exist as much anymore. So you know, we're I think the reason I say this is because we're in a world that's changing a little bit. You know, we're part of the, we're kind of at the tip of that sphere, helping to implement that change. And cabs probably won't look the same in 5 years as they do now, if they exist at all. But there'll be something else because there's a, an element of your investment portfolio when you make a bond offering that you need. But I think the security issues would surprise a lot of people.
And for those of you who don't know, and I'm not. I don't want to make assumptions. The bonds we sell are tax-free to the investors. So if you happen to get one in your own portfolio, a San Marcos bond or a Poway bond or an OSHA, you don't pay taxes on the interest that's paid to you. And that's why we pay a little bit less than what we would.
California
would,
state taxes.
You would, no.
Federal taxes, too?
They don't pay federal taxes either.
Right. How about AMT?
I'm sorry, what?
AMT?
Not a general obligation bond.
I don't.
Not AMT.
I don't think so. And so that's what makes them attractive. I'm surprised the rates didn't go down much further, but they didn't. And that's not my expertise of selling bonds. But it used to always be about 2% lower than a taxable bond. And things have changed.
The interest rate compression is only so far.
And people don't want to invest for 30 years on a low interest, any low interest.
Well, it costs money to finance, to service money.
Okay, well, we were talking about your next meeting.
Yes.
So I was looking at October, which is a quarterly meeting.
Is Thursday good for everybody?
I have the 17th open.
The room's open.
Okay. Is that all right with everyone? October 17th?
Yep.
Same time, same place?
Same place.
And then on the agenda, we'll be talking, one of the subjects is capital appreciation bonds.
Well, I think whatever financing ideas come out of from the board from Monday, you know. There's no sense talking about cabs if they decide they don't want to do anything. Right? So I think the agenda, you know, is open. We can revisit the items we want before we meet in October, depending on what evolves.
So well, even if they decide not to pursue it this time, I still concur with Mike that it's something that as an oversight committee, it should be put on the table and discussed.
Well, we can certainly discuss CABs in a generic sense if you want.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's not necessarily generic. I think it's we have CABs, and we're responsible to see how efficient they were. So generic, yes, but specific as well.
Because your argument of looking at it as a basket of funds works at 3.6% overall, but as we're paying off those short-term interest bonds, they go away, that rate goes up. And so if we're not replacing those with short-term interest bonds, but now with caps or long-term maturity bonds,
well, the issue is set. There's no replacing, right? The bonds are going to mature when they mature. Cabs are going to cabs in the long-term bonds are going to stay out for however long they're set.
Yeah, this is not operational funding. You're not funding your operations with bonds. These are one-time capital purchases. You know, another item that I want, if there was nothing else on cabs, I wanted to suggest another item for a future meeting. I'm not sure if the committee would be interested in doing this. I defer to the chairman and the rest of the committee members. But by October, I anticipate that the high school will be pretty well along. Would there be any interest in another tour?
Yeah, I think Kathy had offered that at the end of the last time. Right, as soon as the school is ready to show.
Okay. Yeah. Also on the agenda, we might have more details on the infrastructure, high technology infrastructure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, an update on whatever projects are underway.
Well, we're doing a plan, and hopefully it'll be further along. October, I'm not sure if we'll... Where are you?
Right.
You're over there. Why aren't you standing? We'll see how far along we are on that plan. But we've hired two consultants, and they go through and analyze the every school, what we have, what we don't have, what we need, what, you know. It's an interesting study because you're dealing with new buildings and very, very old buildings. And so you were talking about wire closets. You know, do we have to actually build one, you know, that's more efficient? I mean, we used little custodial closets when we had to, and evolving into this technology era that we're in. So that's a part of what Kari will be doing with his consultants as well. You know, what do we have to do? If you run a hole through the ceiling, you know, building or room to room to room to run your conduit, are we going to have structural problems? Do we have old asbestos in there? You know, all that stuff is involved in a big study. So that's what we're doing now. We've been running consultants probably since what? January, maybe? Something like that. Yeah. So I'd like to see an end product here one of these days, but we will be presenting that to you as soon as possible. And like I said, we're going to try this bid thing again. And Kari and our director of technology will be working with vendors like Cisco. You're familiar with Cisco? That's a really big name in the systems, and see, you know, what kind of deals can we get? What should we expect from, you know, vendors that offer their product, that sort of thing? So it better be cheaper than what the first bid came in, that's for sure.
And of course, there'll be an update on the web page and Facebook.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'll get back to you the Facebook very quickly.
Good.
And the web page. We're not going to wait till October. We're going to file the report. If I find something very simple for you, I'll send it out to all of you I'll go digging through my 6 inches of documents and make some phone calls. I just couldn't do it while I was away.
Well, if you need to contact the underwriter, we also get the list of who bought our bonds.
No, you'll never get, because it's all book entry only now.
It's dispersed to, you know, other
right,
people.
But who are the initial buyers?
You'll never know. You won't know because today bonds are not, you don't have a physical bond. You know, you go to Merrill Lynch, and Merrill Lynch has an account with the Depository Trust Company. Mm-hmm. So the bonds are held in street name, Merrill Lynch. So you bought it from Merrill Lynch. All VTC sees is Merrill Lynch for the account of Merrill Lynch. And Merrill Lynch keeps a record of who bought it from Merrill Lynch. You'll never know. That's probably, if you ever have to go back and do an amendment on a bond deal, it's near impossible because you can't do it. You don't know who they are.
That way, I usually see institutional buyers bought 98% of the offering, something like that.
Yeah, the big hitters.
Yeah, they just call it institutional buyers,
and they could sell them between each other. It's always on the market, you know. But I don't know why you'd want the original.
Well, who buys it sometimes can be a big factor. For example, if a pension board buys a 5% bond, and you accumulate unfunded liabilities at 7.5%. The taxpayer is making up the other 2.5%.
Well, I don't understand that.
I don't follow that.
When you have a pension fund, you have an assumed rate of return. Mm-hmm. And if you don't meet that...
Most of them are too aggressive right now.
Right. Then the taxpayer has to make up the difference.
Yeah.
Now, if a pension plan buys a 5% bond, then you're not making 7.5% you need to keep up with the unfunded liabilities.
And why is that for the school district?
Well, that is for the taxpayers. And it's something
but it's,
to be
but
concerned.
You mean if the pension goes bust and they have to go to Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation? I don't understand.
Well, I'm concerned about unfunded liabilities.
But I'll
let it pass.
But it's not my unfunded liability.
Right.
It's someone else's problem.
Yeah,
I can't take on everybody's problems.
I'll withdraw it because I'll say it isn't in our purview.
Right.
May I ask, are we at this?
Yeah.
Comment. Gary, yes. Is it possible to get something like this, but